Good morning. Welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host. Today is Monday, February 5th, 2024. And thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate your viewership and we appreciate your support in keeping this network on the air. If you were paying attention at all over the weekend, when most people don't pay attention to the news, you would have seen some amazing things on television this weekend, and I think I want to be talking about that at length today. I would like to thank you for your viewership, not only of the Eastman Financial Report, but also at WVW-TV. As you know, we are a network that's been around since 2006, and we bring some very, very important information to the great marketplace of ideas. And as I am scrolling through our media offerings, I am always impressed with the quality of the content and, of course, the people that are trying frantically to warn not only America but the world about situations that are very, very serious. And I want to talk about one of those in particular today. We appreciate your viewership, of course. We also appreciate every bit of support you can give to this network. As you can imagine, running a television network is not cheap. And we need constant inflow of donations to keep the expenses under control and to keep the information flowing. And this is very important information. I think there's been a number of things happening over the weekend that really point to the fact that the United States is in a very critical situation, and it's in a very fundamental time where events are happening rather quickly. It's very important for people to understand what they're seeing and what's going on. As you know, we're not a commercial network. We don't sell commercials. And we don't, we're not beholden to advertisers and advertisers' opinions. We have our own opinions and we express those opinions because we still have a First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, which allows for freedom of speech. And we put our thoughts and our ideas into the great marketplace of ideas because it matters. And I'd like to thank the sponsor of this program, Swiss America Trading, which, as I say, is a purveyor of precious metals. It's an American company based in Arizona, and they've been in this precious metal space for a very long time. They're experts in that area. So if you're thinking of purchasing precious metals for whatever reason, investment or collection or whatever reason you decide to purchase precious metals, the thing you'd want to do is make sure that whoever you're buying these precious metals from or is an honest player, and the precious metals you buy is the proper quantity and quality of gold or silver or platinum. The best way to do that is to find somebody who's been in the space for a very long time. And of course, we would recommend Swiss America Trading because they are experts in this field. You can reach out to them at 1-800-519-6271 and ask for free information. If you tell them Dan Eastman sent you from the Eastman Financial Report, they're happy to send you information that explains how you go about purchasing precious metals, the risks, the benefits, the upside, the downside. You can get all of that information directly from Swiss America. You can also go to their website, swissamerica.com, and you can shop around and see what they have to offer. They offer a variety of quality gold, silver, platinum, precious metals products, not only in minted coins from national mints that are minting bullion coins. It's an easy way to own gold and silver and platinum. But they also have blocks of bullion that you can buy and in various and sundry sizes. And they also have numismatic coins, which are collector coins, of course, if you're into coin collecting. And that's a separate place and a separate market, but they're certainly expert in that as well. So give Swiss America a call. We appreciate their sponsorship for this network, and we appreciate you considering them when you're interested in making a precious metals purchase. That's 1-800-519-6271 or swissamerica.com. Go to the website, use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, and you'll be able to see what they have to offer and take advantage of any specials they may have. Okay, I want to jump into the news today because the news is quite disturbing. And there's a lot of disturbing news this weekend. I think we're in a phase in American history where it seems that the borders of decency and the borders of structure are being challenged constantly. And of course, if you're going to fundamentally change the United States, you'd want to do that. You'd want to pull out all the legs of the stool at the same time and then laugh as everybody crashes to the floor. Well, the point that I want to make today and the story that I want to discuss is very, very interesting. As you know, if you've been watching my show for the last almost year that I'm a student of economics and a student of finance. I have a bachelor's degree in finance and a master's degree in economics and a law degree, where I practiced corporate law and business law for a very long time. And my entire career, I was also an academic. I spent 9 years teaching in a college and primarily looking at economics and finance. So I've paid attention to this issue all of my career. And that's why when I comment on this, the purpose of this show is commentary. It's to take a look at what's happening in the economy and then analyze that, bring forth points, and with the hope that you will apply critical thinking skills to these facts and other facts and come to a conclusion as to what's happening within the economy, because of course the economy affects all of us. We all participate in the American economy, whether you like to or not, you're a participant. And how that economy is structured, how it functions, how it works from a legal perspective, a policy perspective, an economic perspective, fundamental core economic principles, it all impacts all of us every day. We all get up in the morning and we all consume things, food, clothing, shelter. We all contribute to the great economy through some effort of work. And at the end of the day, we are all participants in the economy, from the poorest to the richest. You're in this deal. So it's important for the average American to start putting the toys down and start thinking about more fundamental aspects of what it means to be not only an American citizen, but also what it means to survive in a global economy. And this is a big lead up to what I saw yesterday was disturbing on a number of levels. And of course, what I'm referring to is we were able to see the Federal Reserve Chairman, Jerome Powell, on television being interviewed. Now, in this day of instant media, and of course transparency, it should be expected that people in power are transparent and that you can see what they're doing and what they're saying. But let me put some perspective to the Federal Reserve System. It's very important to understand that Chairman Powell is not a cabinet secretary. He's not appointed by the president to serve in the administration. There's a long-standing debate in the United States experience about how we should structure banking. And banking is an inherently risky business. You take somebody's money in and you lend it to somebody else, and you take, as a banker, the spread. You pay them 5% on their deposit, you lend it out at 8%, and 3% is yours. That's your gross profit on the deal. Well, that seems like a very simple business concept until you start to think about the risk involved. The person who put the money on deposit may want it back, okay? And they may want it back before they agreed to take it back. On the other hand, the money, the proceeds that you lent to somebody, the borrower, the commercial borrower, or the consumer borrower, they may not pay it back. They may default. And there's always the risk that the money you took in from somebody else won't be there when the person wants it back. And that is fundamentally the risk of banking that goes back to the Mesopotamian era. It goes all the way back to the beginning. There's a timing problem. So when you put money on a one-year CD, the idea is you're going to tie it up for a year. Then the bank lends the money for a one-year car note or whatever. And there's this idea that over the course of the year, the borrower will pay it back. The interest will be put into the books of the bank, and the principal will be paid back to the depositor. That's banking, and it's always been a very, very risky business. And we look throughout history, not only United States history, but earlier into European history, all the way back. I mean, even in scriptures, the crabby king says to the the unworthy servant, "You could have at least put my talents on deposit with the banker so I could earn interest." This has been around a long time. And of course, we have a Federal Reserve System that started in 1913, and the idea was it would bring structure and responsibility to the banking system. We would have a lender of last resort. If a bank got wobbly, the Federal Reserve shovels the money in the back door so the tellers can pay it out the front door, and we avoid the Jimmy Stewart and Mary Poppins bank run scenario. That's primarily the goal of a Federal Reserve System. And then, of course, it has this dual mandate. I talk about this all the time, 2% inflation and full employment. Well, all of this happens in a Federal Reserve system that is traditionally a private entity. It is not a government entity. And it says, you know, Federal Reserve. And oh, that must be the federal government, right? It's not. It's not. It's a private banking organization. And for decades and decades after the creation of the Federal Reserve, the Federal Reserve Board of Governors would meet with a committee called the Federal Open Market Committee. And that's what we see in the news. I've been talking about it every couple of months. And they would deliberate based on what they see in the economy. And of course, the staff of the Federal Reserve prepares what's called the Beige Book, and it's an analysis. I think it's six times a year. It comes out and they analyze the economy. And it was designed, the whole thing was designed so that the private banking system, and banking used to have all sorts of privacy things about it, but we don't do that anymore because now, you know, the federal government wants to know everybody who's doing anything and moving money hither and yon and here and there. Every last, you know, dollar is noted and tracked by the federal government today. So this banking secrecy has gone out the window. And as we look at the Federal Reserve, it was a private meeting to decide where the interest rates are, because the interest rates mattered in the American economy. If you raise the interest rates, the economy would slow down. If you cut the interest rates, the economy would speed up. And I joke about that because others have joked about it. It's moving the punch bowl back and forth. Well, all of these private meetings, these Federal Open Market Committee meetings back in the olden days, probably about 25 years ago, were private. They were secret. And nobody talked about it. They went in, you know, and they talked. And then all of a sudden, you know, there'd be this subtle increase or a subtle decrease in interest rates. And at the end of the day, it was the banking system controlling the size of the economy. And that's the way it was designed, because the banking system is a component of the private sector. In socialist and communist societies, the government controls everything. And there's this constant need at the federal government level to be able to control the economy. And the problem that the federal government of the United States has is the Federal Reserve. It's theoretically independent, okay? And as a result of that, you get this conflict where ultimately now the Federal Reserve, when it goes into its Federal Open Market Committee meetings, they actually publish their minutes of what happened in the meeting. And this is, you know, today in this transparent world, we say, well, of course you should publish, you know, you're the Federal Reserve, we should see all of this stuff. But they publish those minutes 3 weeks after they meet so as not to move markets, okay? And the reason I'm giving this background is because what we saw with Chairman Powell on a very famous news program last night was saying things that were so far out of the norm that it has raised eyebrows, not only in the financial world, in the political world, but, you know, at the structural level, when you hear the Federal Reserve President saying some of these crazy things, this is a matter of great concern. And of course, while this is going on, we also have this border situation going on where the states are, you know, starting to become fed up with this idea that you're just going to flood the United States with all these people. But this ties together. And I want to point out some of Chairman Powell's comments about this last night on television, on public television. And back in the day, the Federal Reserve Chair, I don't even know who that was. It was just, you know, a group of people. And maybe that's what Americans don't like, is this lack of transparency. So I say, okay, we'll give you transparency. But then with transparency, assuming he wasn't talking through his hat, as they say, making statements that were just absolutely stunning from the perspective of the people who are running the banking system. Now, I want to just rattle off what some of the choice items that the Chairman Powell said. And of course, the debate has been over the last 6 months, and this has been a phenomenon, an interesting situation, a phenomenon to watch, is that, let's go back a year or two. We know that inflation was 9%. It had surged 9%. It came out of nowhere, driven, you know, post-COVID. Lots of people apparently had money that they had saved up, and they went out and spent it, and, you know, cost push or demand pull inflation. Prices started to go up. Well, the Federal Reserve did what it's supposed to do by its federal mandate, and took action to slow down the rate of inflation, because inflation tends to hurt the poorest members of society, is they don't have a boat in the harbor. When the inflation, you know, tide comes in, they don't have a boat. There's, you know, a rising tide floats all boats. And for the people who don't have boats, that's not a good thing. So they did what they're supposed to do, and they basically raised the interest rates. And they raised the interest rates to the point where we had three major banks that failed, and they had to be absorbed within the system. And they were. The mechanism worked. And that's one of the things that the Federal Reserve does as a lender of last resort. They, you know, you step in and you fix the banking system. They're the regulators of the banking system. And they're focused on this 2% inflation. So when inflation reports at 9%, they raise the interest rates. It has massive impact on the banking system because banking reserve values decline. It's an algebraic inverse relationship between interest rates and value of underlying debt instruments. And of course, that put the banks at risk, and three of them basically, you know, they became insolvent, technically insolvent, and they had to be merged. And of course, the Federal Reserve was trying to control the interest rates and drop it down to 2%. And the question is, who picked the 2%? You know, it's the calculations made by Federal Reserve staff. Why couldn't it be 2.5? What if it was 1.5? What if it was 3? But what they're doing is focusing on this number of 2%, and they've raised the interest rates. And then about, you know, back in fall, they're talking about cutting rates. And then they say, we're not cutting rates. And then they 180 degree turn, we will cut rates in March. And then they turned around and said, we're not cutting rates. And when the Federal Reserve signals this stuff, that's why they did this in quiet in the olden days. It's just they'd have this position, and then, you know, rates would kind of go up and rates would kind of go down. Now they're sending out these public signals that are making it very difficult for markets and businesses and people, consumers, to figure out what's going on. Mortgage rates are going up, they're coming down, they're going up, they're coming down. And at the end of the day, what it looks like is that the Federal Reserve is groping for a solution. And that's why these meetings were secret back in the old days, because there has to be an aura at the Federal Reserve that the Federal Reserve is in absolute control of the money supply. That's their job. And what we're seeing today is this whipsawing back and forth. And that was happening last week. So when we know when the Federal Open Market Committee meeting happened last week, that they decided to keep interest rates flat, and they signaled, we're not going to be cutting these things in March like we said we were 2 months ago. We're going to keep it flat. Well, the problem with the flat is it's high, and that's costing the Treasury of the United States a stunning amount of money in interest payments. And we know from a news story today, which I thought was very interesting, that in 2024, they're projecting they're going to refinance $10 trillion in federal debt, because the stuff comes due and they've got to roll it over and new debt needs to be issued because of our massive deficit spending. So at the end of the day, we're going to have $10 trillion, which is roughly a third of all of the outstanding, yeah, $34 trillion and 10%, you know, $10 trillion is a little less than a third. And what it's going to do is create a vast expansion in the cost of money, of cost of debt, that is directly a burden to the American taxpayer. The IRS has got to go out and collect all the money in a slower economy when we're seeing, you know, tax proceeds are nowhere near what it takes to cover the current spending deficit. And that deficit includes, which is now well into $1 trillion, of interest on money that was borrowed and spent years ago. We are in a debt loop and a debt cycle. Well, this is not a good place to be. So Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell comes out and he says federal spending is not on a sustainable path. He says that out loud. And he says, well, we're in a good place. We're in a good place. He's, I don't know where he is, but he basically he says that federal spending is not in a sustainable place. That's a real problem, because when you have the Federal Reserve Chair telling you that the federal government, this is Janet Yellen, and it's not Janet Yellen's, you know, she didn't do it. She's the poor soul who's stuck with having to figure out how to finance all of this. It's the United States Congress cannot spend within its means. And the administration simply cannot grasp. And it's either careless naivete or intentional. And that's for the voters to decide. But at the end of the day, what the Federal Reserve Chairman said is that the federal spending is not sustainable. Well, what does that mean? We have no mechanism in Congress to balance a budget or to cut spending. We're looking at $78 billion, which is pennies at this stage, $78 billion that, you know, they're fighting back and forth and it's all about spending and the border, we're gonna do this, and they don't have it. They don't have it. They have to borrow every last nickel of that. And the Federal Reserve is saying, and interestingly, Chairman Powell says that they are independent and they're going to remain independent and they're not political. And this is an institution that serves the American people. And I got my Constitution on. I'm looking around. Where's the part about the Federal Reserve? I don't see that in the federal Constitution. But at the end of the day, basically, somebody, the Federal Reserve, is holding the interest rates constant at a time when the federal government is spending itself, us, broke. And this is a fascinating thing that he would actually come out and say that the federal spending is not on a sustainable path. And it just kind of goes in one ear and out the other because people don't quite grasp what's happening. They're looking at $78 billion and we're going to fix the immigration bill and send, you know, money to Israel and send money to Ukraine and wherever else they send money off to. There's no nexus in Washington. But the Federal Reserve Chair said this out loud, which is fascinating to me. I've been studying the Federal Reserve along with many, many Fed watchers for decades, and this was a really, really interesting statement. He also made a very interesting statement talking about the commercial real estate loan portfolio problem. And basically, he admitted, and if you've been watching this show, I've been saying, other commentators have been saying, that the commercial real estate portfolios are concentrated in the regional banks. And the regional banks have traditionally been the banks that make the loans on office buildings and apartment buildings and commercial strips, because those are right in their sweet spot. And at the end of the day, Chairman Powell made comments that, number one, that he understands that there's a fundamental change in the work habits of Americans. And I've been saying that for quite a period of time here. And as a problem with that, there will be banks that will fail, and they're dealing with it. He doesn't think it's going to be a conflagration and bring us down like 2008, but he's publicly admitting that we can expect to see bank failures, and these banks will be merged into stronger banks, fewer regional banks, and stronger banks are going to be stuck with the same non-performing commercial loans. The loans aren't going away. You're just going to take it out of one bank's vault and put it into the next bank's vault. And that was a really interesting interesting comment. He also commented that the Federal Reserve missed the Silicon Valley Bank situation, which is quite surprising because the Federal Reserve regulates the banking system. It's kind of an interesting thing because the Federal Reserve isn't a state federal agency. It's an independent agency, but it sets forth the rules of banking. If you want to operate a bank, you are very much going to deal with the Federal Reserve, and you're going to deal with the FDIC, the Federal Insurance Deposit Corporation, and perhaps state bank regulators, as well as other layers of regulation in the economy. So for the Fed to admit that they had missed the run-up in the Silicon Valley Bank situation, when they were the ones raising the rates and diminishing the value of the reserves, it was quite a statement. It's quite a statement to make. It was quite surprising, but we can expect to see a lot of turmoil when the Federal Reserve Chair comes on television and he says, "You know what? The commercial real estate loan situation is problematic, and certain banks will fail." That's something that you don't usually hear the Federal Reserve Chairman say. And, you know, he said that bank runs happen faster now than they have in the past because of social media. So if your bank gets wobbly, then you don't have to be like the Jimmy Stewart movie where you go down and, you know, stand there and bang on the glass. You just have to basically look at your cell phone and go on your social media network, and everybody's panicked, and you'll join the panic and race right in as well. So it's really an interesting comment to make that bank runs can happen a lot faster, and we certainly didn't see Silicon Valley Bank happening. And you kind of wonder maybe how that could be, because certainly the Federal Reserve is broken into 12 regions, And there's a region right in San Francisco. I've actually walked past the building, and it's kind of their job to pay attention to that sort of stuff. He also made this very troubling comment about immigration, that immigration since 2018, all new jobs created in the United States, for the most part, have been filled by immigrants, which is very interesting. He calls them Native Americans, which is people who were born here. And I think I've caught myself saying that from time to time. I think back in the olden days, Native Americans meant Aboriginal peoples that were here before.
Something is happening right now then.
But at the end of the day, he seems to think that the immigrants work harder than Native-born Americans, and therefore that's a real positive thing, that we need more people coming in, because apparently the Americans that are here are lazy and we don't work, and you know, at 3.4% unemployment, that was another interesting thing to say by a guy who runs the banking system in the United States, that if you want to find hard workers, you have to let immigrants come in, because they'll work harder than the folks who were born here. Overall, if you have a chance to read the transcript or watch the video, I suggest you do that, because at the end of the day, what it tells you is that we have a federal government that is so grossly out of control from a fiscal perspective. It cannot manage its budget, and its budget is our money. This federal government has detached itself from the people of the United States. It's a thing unto itself with taxing authority. And they have, not only you must pay your taxes, and I encourage all of you to pay your taxes to avoid persecution, because you got to pay your taxes, you calculate the amount and send it in, and because they are going to be going after every last tax dollar, but it doesn't matter, because they're $2 trillion off the mark. And more of that spending is being financed. It's like if you use your credit cards to pay your old credit cards, and you're growing your debt. This is where we are at the federal level. And when you see the Federal Reserve Chair that's telling you the federal spending is not on a sustainable path, and you see people in Congress that are just absolutely incapable of managing the people, the public fisc, the responsibility of taking money from its citizens and using it for the public good versus bankrupting the public on a spending spree that is detached from reality, and it doesn't seem to be controlled by anyone. I saw my congressman in the neighborhood over the week. It was a week ago this weekend. And just shook my head. It was a lion of conservatism in Wisconsin politics. Truly a brave and just a highly responsible conservative Wisconsin state senator. And we sent that poor guy off to Washington. It's sad. None of them have power to do anything. You get in line, they swear you in, you do what you're told, and that's the machine. And this machine is not beholden to the people. And I think you're starting to see a real reaction from various states in the United States that are saying, you know, this is an unsustainable path. And the proof is in the numbers. It's not something where it's political or radical, or you got to put a tinfoil hat on. You just have to look at the numbers. And that's a big part of what this program's about, is an economic and financial discussion of how does finance work? Well, when you're trying to function as a business or a consumer or, you know, somebody who lives within an economy, you better be paying attention to these macro trends, because historically this stuff never ended well. And it didn't end well in the Roman Empire. It didn't end well in, you know, Romania. It didn't end well in Germany in the 1920s. It certainly isn't going very well in Zimbabwe. It's not going well when the Soviet Union collapsed. It's not going well in Venezuela. And they're putting us in a situation where the value of everything you have is deteriorating as a result of this imaginary and illusionary idea that the federal government of the United States has infinite wealth, infinite resources, infinite power. And at the end of the day, we're broke. You just cannot operate at $34 trillion, soon to be $36 trillion. We're running a $2 trillion deficit. And you can't just be the world's power when you're broke. And our enemies know that. And they're just sitting back and they're watching this. And, you know, it's not just me talking here on, you know, an obscure financial program on an obscure network. This is the Federal Reserve Chairman saying federal spending is not on a sustainable path. Well, you know, that's the guy who runs the banking system. He's saying, we can't do these deficits. But what do you cut? Where do you cut? Where do you grow the political courage to manage the public's money in a way that makes sense? And quite frankly, with a population base of 330 million people, that's it. That's all you have to tax. And then, you know, you bring in 10 more million new ones, just, you know, that are taking the lowest jobs in the economy. That's not a tax base that can do this. Anyway, let's talk more about this week. And certainly thank you so much for tuning in. And I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.